All right. You know what? Listen, the Niners are 3-0. Nick Bosa is out for the year. And we've been taking calls all afternoon. We've got plenty of room for more. 888-957-9570. How about that emotional struggle that's happening inside your belly today? Nick's out for the year, but the Niners are 3-0 with two wins within the division. So we're talking it out on which side of that emotion is sort of winning the day for you. For Dibs and I, both of us, it's 3-0. There is this other side to it, though, that was one of my three things, one of my three observations that I did want to dig into a little bit more today. And just sort of like, look, this is not meant to be a yeah, but. It's not meant to be a criticism. I think Kyle Shanahan has put on largely a coaching clinic so far this year with the way they've been able to kind of navigate these wins, even though it is not the most clean thing. It's certainly not visually pleasing. It's not all of that. It doesn't look very high-powered. But I'm fascinated by just sort of the juju that's around all of this thing. You know, last year, the Niners had how many of their 11 losses were you like, good Lord, it was the opposite of pulling a rabbit out of a hat? You stuffed a rabbit into a hat.
Yeah.
How many times did it happen? It happened again.
Probably three times, I would say.
At least,
well,
right?
I'm thinking about the 11 losses, and you got motorboated in Green Bay, you got housed in Buffalo, and then the last two games of the year were, who cares?
Yeah, like Detroit Arizona.
Clobbered you, and Arizona you didn't even try.
I mean, Detroit
so that's
really
four
clobber
of your
you,
11.
Yeah, no, but I'll agree with you that okay. It didn't, yeah.
So that's four of the 11, and I'm thinking about primarily Arizona, L.A., and Seattle. Those three games where the L.A. one, you mentioned it, it was a five-play parlay where five plays went against you. There was a big punt return, a big P.I., a big pass reception, and you lost a game. There was the Ronnie Bell drop in a game that you were going to close it out. That might have been Arizona.
No, that was the first L.A. game.
Okay.
Yep.
And then the Seattle and the Arizona games were very winnable that you found a way to cough up fourth quarter lead. So I looked at three, if not four games that were winnable that you lost.
I think you're right. It's three. The only other one that would even threaten to be in this conversation is the other Rams game where they played in the rain on a Thursday night.
Right, 12-6.
And Deebo Samuel dropped that ball that was going to be an absolute walk-in touchdown at the 10-yard line after squawking about not getting the ball enough. And so, you know, maybe that would have been a win, maybe not. But, yeah, at least three, maybe four. And if they win those four, do they go to the playoffs? I mean, technically, yes. You don't win all of your close games. I get it. But, my God, it is the exact opposite this year. It's stunning. It's stunning. I could sit here and think, and maybe not. Look, they outplayed the Saints. I'm not going to say otherwise. But I even had somebody who worked for the Niners use this phrase about the Seattle game. Because we had no business winning that game. Now, you had all the time of possession, but you fell down late. Your kicker and kicking game was a complete and total mess. Cooper Kupp had a very key play go right through his hands. And even the game-winning touchdown that you eventually had, I know you don't want to use the word lucky, but whatever we want to call that, it was an unorthodox kind of a play that was not the plan, if you will. So all of those things happen in Seattle. New Orleans, I felt like the momentum could have been very different if Spencer Rattler just hits Chris Olave on what in the NFL is an easy pitch and catch by himself in the end zone. And they missed him and he dropped it. Juwan Johnson drops multiple balls.
That was the opening drive, right?
Yes.
The Olave.
Yeah, but it changes everything if they go up 7-0 instead.
And they missed the field goal.
Yeah, they settled for a field goal that they didn't even hit.
Yep.
And then the Niners took the lead and sort of led the game most of the way. And then I don't even need to remind you all about what happened yesterday. And I know you don't want to do this. I do. Marvin Harrison did not have a drop. He had two. I know the one in the end zone's a harder play. You're the fourth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
That ball is in your hands, and you are open, and he flat out just missed it.
Well, he's diving backward in the end zone headlong. That's not a drop. That would be a fantastic catch if he comes down with
it. I would argue that that's not a fair description.
I think you're being too harsh on the ordinary effort that he would have to have in order for that to be a classic drop. I mean, that was And I don't even know if that pass was intended for him. There was two receivers in that area.
Well, P.I.
was kind of a weird...
Yeah, P.I. got called on the other guy.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's because Renardo Green was absolutely all over the receiver, and so Harrison dives, and that to me would have been not an extraordinary catch. It would have been a great catch. And so that to me doesn't go down as a drop. You're diving all the way backward, and the ball is in your hands, and then you jar in the end zone.
Yeah.
But the other one was absolutely... just an egregious drop where you beat the defender, broken coverage, and you catch that, you run for another 15, 20, maybe more easy. That is a field-switching, game-changing play that 100%. You didn't make.
And we didn't even bring up the DeMarcado one. And look,
that was even worse.
It's even worse. And if you don't want to use the word drop, that's fine with Harrison in the end zone. It's a catch that I believe a big-time NFL receiver should make. I don't think he was bending over backwards or diving or whatever. I think he was jumping, and the ball went right to him, and he didn't catch it. But it doesn't even matter. The point is the Niners have gotten some breaks. The Niners have gotten some breaks. I think it's okay to say this. In a way, it's a compliment. The 49ers have not created these breaks for their opponents the same way their opponents have created them for the Niners. So that's a compliment. But I look at these football games, and if I'm being fair, I got to say the same thing about the Niners right now that I said all year about the Kansas City Chiefs last year. This is not sustainable. You cannot win every game by one score with like, whoa, he dropped it, and Tom just stepped in front of someone, and there's a safety, but Upton Stout made somebody drop it on the line. Like, holy hell. You are walking the tightest of tight ropes right now if you're the 49ers, and it's brilliant. It's tremendous that they've won them all, and we're cool with it because there's a reason. We can look at it and go, well, this isn't the Niners. They're missing all kinds of key players. But at the same time, that's my hope for the future of this team. You take it week by week, but as the reinforcements come, as DeMarcus Robinson shows up, Brock Purdy starts playing again, George Kittle comes back, Brandon Ayuk comes back, Juwan Jennings comes back. As all that happens, this team is going to have to be a much more efficient and effective football team if they would like to continue to win games. You don't do this for a whole year. You just don't.
I mean, you can.
It's going to get well.
It's tough.
And the Chiefs did. And then they didn't get their comeuppance until the Super Bowl. That's very rare, though.
Right. They won by 7-1-5-7. That was the start of the year. Then they beat New Orleans by 13. They beat the Niners by 10. Then they won by 7. They won in overtime. They won by 2. And then they lost to Buffalo. Then they won by 3 at Carolina. They won by 2 over the Raiders. They beat the Chargers by 2. So there were all those games, and it started on the opener when the tight end for Baltimore landed with a toe
like
on the end line.
Toe
likely.
Nails. Yes, Isaiah Likely.
Otherwise,
yes.
That game is tied, and it goes to overtime. Maybe they go for 2, whatever. But through 3 games, yes, this feels a little bit like the Chiefs last year where, you know, whether or not you want to call it luck or good fortune, I look at the way these games have ended, especially yesterday where, okay, Niners, you get the ball back, and you've got to go from your own 20. You have to get down into Eddie Pinheiro field goal range, which is probably the 30, we'll call it, the 35. So you need to get 45 yards with one timeout and a minute 45 to go with your backup quarterback. Can you do it? And they did it. And they did it through, you know, great play calling, great execution. Mac Jones on that drive was pretty spectacular, and he went to Tonjes, he went to Moore, he went to Kendrick Bourne twice. Tonjes, Sky Moore, and Kendrick Bourne. Those were your targets as you found your way down the field, then the screen to McCaffrey, then the kick, you win.
And that's why I'm okay with it, because again, this is a patchwork group. It's a patchwork group, and so I like you look at the offense right now, and we're telling ourselves it's okay that it's going this way because XYZ. But when XYZ comes back, this is going to have to look very different. And I don't know exactly that it will. I mean, look, how did it look in Seattle? because that was patchwork-ish. But Brock Purdy played in that game. George Kittle played in that game. Juwan Jennings played in that game. Ricky Pearsall played in that game. And Christian McCaffrey played in that game. I know some of them left. I know George left. I know Juwan Jennings left. And so in the end, you're throwing to Jake Tonjes. But even when all those guys were in, the offense was not moving the ball very well, you know, and Seattle appears to be a pretty good team, a pretty good defense, and that's a hard place to play. So I guess that's what I'm getting at. Like, so far, the reasoning, the excuses, if you want to use that bad word, they're there. And so that's okay. But they're not going to be there for much longer. I don't know how you feel about this weekend. Obviously, there will still be no Kittle, but if you get Purdy back, and if Robinson is in good health, and Jennings is back, and Pearsall's there, and Tonjes now has games under his belt, McCaffrey's good to go, B-Rob's good to go, Juszczyk good to go, like, yes, I would like the 49ers to score 24 or more points. To feel, and it, by the way, weather's going to be great, you're yep. at home, all of those things. This feels like a game where the Niners, on offense, need to be a little bit more prolific to kind of calm us down a little bit.
I would like to see them be able to run the ball effectively. And that's the biggest thing for me right now that is missing, because you're asking Mac Jones the last two games and Brock Purdy the game before that to throw the ball a lot. And you mentioned it last week that they're more of a passing team than ever before. And I'm okay with it when you're winning games, but I do think that the Shanahan formula, and I'm thinking about the Seattle game, and I'm just looking back at my notes where you open up your first possession and they went 95 yards down the field and they ran it, they passed it to Pearsall, and they were able to move the ball down the field with running and passing, and they possessed it. They possessed it almost 40 minutes in that game and they beat Seattle. And that for me is the classic Shanahan blueprint. And then you look at yesterday where Arizona was doing what Shanahan likes to do, which is long drives. And you know, fortunately, the Cardinals had a couple of plays that they didn't make that would have led to touchdowns, and they had to settle for field goals. And so even though you lost the time of possession battle, it didn't burn you because the Cardinals made those classic mistakes. And then when they lost James Conner in the third quarter, now they were really hamstrung offensively because their running game largely went away when they didn't have James Conner.
Kyler Murray is a tough watch when you're rooting for the other team. It's a tough watch. I don't mind when somebody else is carving you up and they're really good. I don't feel like Kyler Murray is very good. But he's so fast. And so, you know, look, that's part of his makeup. And he was able, I think that's why you had this dynamic of like, oh, the Cardinals have the ball constantly, but they didn't go anywhere. Like, the Cardinals yesterday were the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. Like, those the Flintstones, whatever. All those cartoons back in the day where their legs would spin in a circle and you go nowhere. Because he can do that. Every time it's third and six and no one's open, he's like, oh, I'm gonna run and I'm going to move the chains. But we're just, instead of being at the 20, now we're at the 26. And so they never really went anywhere. I thought the 49er defense largely yesterday was phenomenal. Like, they're phenomenal because that's a really hard assignment. And anytime you're a lineman and you end up out of the pocket and you're face-to-face with Kyler, fans will be like, get him. And I'm always like, you're not going to get him. Like, that's a no. You can't get him. You just can't. You cannot be 300 pounds and get him.
Well, even Jair Brown on the one where he blitzed right. And Murray sees him. And it's funny watching Kyler Murray because I have a toddler. She's 3 years old, and he runs the way my toddler runs yep. with these tiny, tiny steps, but unbelievable, like, leg turnover. The way he runs is just like, and you just can't catch him. And Jair Brown chased him all the way around the corner, and Kyler Murray just kept going and kept going. And there were a couple of different runs where he just, with those little small choppy steps, and he gets 10 yards and he holds the ball out. First down, move the chains. And it's interesting you say about, you know, Arizona doing all this stuff and not going anywhere. Their opening drive was a 9-play, 22-yard drive that they wound up missing a 57-yard field goal. Nine plays, 22 yards.
How are you even allowed to do that?
They got 2-7-0, 4th-and-1, they picked it up. McBride for 5, false start, back it up. Connor gets 10, oh, delay a game, back it up again. Murray with a boop, 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 boop for 6. Benson for 1, knock down a pass, time for a field goal.
That's what I'm saying.
And they miss it.
Yeah, like they're not good. They're just really like frustratingly annoying because you can't get them to go away. There's just like this little annoying bug that, you know, when a bug follows you around, you're in a park having a picnic and bug's in your face.
Usually it's a yellow jacket.
Yeah. You're just like, stop following me. That's kind of what watching the Cardinals offense feels like.
And that's how the whole game felt like. Yeah. And I'm looking at my chart. The Cardinals had one explosive play in the first half, and that's a run of 10 or more or a pass of 20 or more. James Conner had a 10-yard run. End of explosives. And the Niners only had 2, and they both came on that last drive. CMC for 10, Pearsall a 20-yard catch. That whole game was like, we get 3 yards, we get 4, we're going to punt, or we're going to get a field goal, and Arizona was doing the same thing. So neither offense until deep in the second half, that game was 6-6, right?
Yep.
In the fourth quarter.
Yep.
So every game is different, and you're not going to win all the games 38-35, but I do think without Bosa, you do need to kind of think about ramping up this offense.
Well, and I look also at, like, to me, the Niner defense is young, and you can see it sometimes. They're talented, they're fast, they're ferocious, and they're pretty good. But then, like, once a quarter, you're like, whoop, oh, boy, they left the whole half of the field open and someone's there. And so far this year, those plays have either been dropped balls or missed passes, just miscues by the other team. You're not going to play those teams every single – like, Sam Darnold was coming to a new team. Spencer Rattler is a baby who just got a starting job. And while Kyler Murray's been around for a while, they're okay. They're not great. But in a week and a half, for example, if you flash like that, now with no Nick Bosa, Matt Stafford's your quarterback, Puka Nacua is on one side, Davante Adams is on the other, you have smart veterans who are going to make you look stupid if you are making young player mistakes. And so I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I promised I wouldn't.
Yep.
It's Jacksonville. But that type of defense, now especially without Bosa, that's what would worry me if I were Robert Saleh. I feel like an experienced team with players who've been doing this for a while and really know what they're doing, and they're buttoned up, I think that's the kind of offense right now that could give the 49ers trouble, even more than an offense that has a really fast scat back type quarterback.
And we can look more at Jacksonville as the week rolls on, because just, you know, revisiting yesterday's game, which was a 17-10 win over Houston, not a great offensive performance, but Jacksonville does have some interesting receiving options that can pose a problem. But yesterday you were mentioning like a young defense and mistakes, and their only touchdown drive for Arizona, Harrison gets a 32-yard pass where he was pretty wide open. Two plays later, Renardo Green, P.I. in the end zone,
yep,
and boom, all of a sudden now it's a touchdown.
Yeah, no, when they went up 13-6, the way that game was going, you're like, I think they've got it. And then 4 minutes later, you're like, we don't got it anymore.
2 minutes and 13 seconds later, in fact. And it was a big pass to Harrison finally, where he was wide open down the middle, and then the P.I. And so, you know, you talk about a young defense, and no defense is going to be perfect, but that was the kind of a drive, quote unquote. It was basically two plays, bam, bam, and you know, that game was tied again.
I want to ask you a question about McCaffrey, but we'll do so after we check in with Jay in Richmond. Jay, thank you for calling the show. What's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
You guys been my morning show for the last 3 months. I'm almost off night, so man, you guys are doing a great job.
Okay, so like, what do you do, Jay?
I'm a crane operator in one of these beloved refineries in the Bay Area.
Okay, so when do you get off work?
I get off work at 6 in the morning.
You get off work at 6 in the morning?
So I tune in to the Joe show in the morning for a little bit, and that's about it. Then I catch you guys in the morning.
Okay, so then you go to bed, and then you wake up to us.
Yes, sir.
Look at that. Wow. Okay. Well, good morning, Jay. What's up?
I'm sure you guys already Good morning. I'm sure you guys already covered it, but man, so when we got the safety and we punted, well, when we got the safety on us, it seemed like the Cardinals had all this momentum. And you're talking about that Marvin Harrison drop. I'm surprised Fred Warner did not get a taunting call. And I was, after watching that, I just have one request. Next time you talk to Fred Warner, I need to know what he said to Marvin Harrison when he was circling it, when he was circling him, man. That was hilarious.
I think I know what he said, Jay. I think he said, "Hey, did you hear I'm having another baby?" Because, but by the way, we talked to Fred last week, and I didn't know that she's pregnant again.
Yep.
They're having another baby. Thank you, Jay. Good morning to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably said, Marvin, I was thinking about having you be the midwife in the delivery, but the way you dropped the football, I don't think I can afford to have you in the room in case you're going to drop my baby now.
That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing. I was going to have you come over and hold the baby.
Yes.
But you would drop it.
Yeah.
So you're not going to hold the baby.
And By the way, Jay, it was a quick taunt. It wasn't like a super taunt, but he definitely stood there. He's like, I'm not, whatever. You can say so what. Rules are rules. And
no, but what is the rule?
You're
not allowed to talk. All he did was talk.
Right. And he didn't point, taunt. He didn't stand over him. He didn't taunt. He didn't point. He was there and he was in pursuit because it was a blown coverage.
Yeah.
And he runs up after the fact and he said, oh, man, thank you for dropping that.
He might have.
I was gonna have to run a lot further to try to catch you, Marvin.
Fred, he might have leaned in, but boy, you had me on that one. Who knows what he said?
He probably said, your dad wouldn't have dropped that one. Marvin Harrison Sr. takes that to the Heezy, Junior.
He's been a
Junior.
I'm not gonna call him.
It's early.
It's too early, but he's been a disappointment.
Do you know that Ricky Pearsall has more 100-yard receiving games in the last five games he's played than Marvin Harrison Jr. has in his 20 career games?
In his career, yeah, yeah. I don't think there's any way to run from it. He's been a disappointment.
Right, and it's. Obviously, it's very early, year two, and I do think a lot of it goes to the quarterback and the connection. And if you watch Arizona football, and I don't watch every snap, but I've watched enough of it to know that when Calamari gets back there, he's looking for 85. Trey McBride.
As he should. That's his best player.
If he's not looking for 85, he's checking that thing down. And I have Michael Wilson on my bench, and I think I had him last year.
Yep.
Actually, I did have him last year. So I watch a lot of Arizona, and Kyler Murray does not look down the field. He looks down the field, and then it's either, where's my check down, or let me get these legs a-moving, because that is the safer, smarter play.
I think the bigger concern, if you either, whatever, if you're a fan of Marvin Harrison, or you have him on your team, or you thought more of him, or all those things, the bigger issue is that when it's not Trey McBride, and if it's not a check down, like the target share after that gets spread kind of evenly. Between Michael Wilson.
Yep, that's my guy.
And whoever else they've got at receiver, and that, if you're the fourth pick in the draft and you have that name and that body, it shouldn't be that way. Like, you should be a dog where they're just like, we're gonna look directly for you in those situations, and they don't. They don't. So that's all. It's not a big deal. I just think he's been a disappointment. No question.
But if you look at ones across the league, like we're watching Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he's going to get the lion's share of targets, pun intended. Nico Collins in Houston, and you were mentioning Jacksonville. We'll get deeper into Brian Thomas Jr. and how
later in the week,
strange it is the way they distribute targets. But just look no further than Ricky Pearsall. And I know it's skewed because you don't have George Kittle, but Pearsall and McCaffrey accounted for about 70% of the targets yesterday, and that's the way that's going to go. When you've got Pearsall is the one, and when Ayuk comes back, it'll be interesting to see how he's integrated and how the target share is spread out. Somebody we talked to before is like, oh no, and when Ayuk comes back, he's the one. There's no doubt. And
I don't know if that conversation's changed now. I don't see it that way at all, especially not this year.
That was Hushmanzada who said that.
Well, of course Hushmanzada thinks that. Opening drive touchdown for the Lions. Jahmyr Gibbs is already into the end zone.
Man, y'all don't know the game, man.
Yeah,
TJ. You want to get paid?
TJ is Brandon's coach.
Oh, that's not fair.
So I get what TJ's thinking was. You can pay someone $30 million and not have him be your one? Well, if he's not producing, then yeah.
That don't have nothing to do with me.
Like, he's got to come back from the injury. And I don't think he's going to be his full best self. And I also think that Ricky Pearsall is a first-round draft pick, just right. like Brandon was.
And I don't even know what being a one is. Like, if...
Well, in this offense, it's different. It is.
Right.
It's different than Ja'Marr Chase.
Fine.
Who they just lean on.
Right, you know what I mean? Justin Jefferson, sure. who is, you know, the clear-cut best receiver. Right. Even with Cincinnati, though, you got Higgins and you've got Yoshivash and, you know, you've got other targets. Sure. But, and I was looking just at Jacksonville yesterday. They targeted 11 different receivers. 11 different human beings got targets.
It's the weirdest.
That's crazy.
It's the weirdest offense.
LaQuint Allen Jr. Yeah, got a target.
It has been for a while.
Like Johnny Munt got a target.
It feels like every single time the Jacksonville Jaguars have sort of some definition at receiver, they then bring someone else in and muddy the waters. Example being, they were the ones... were they the ones or were the Cardinals the one? Who gave Christian Kirk the big contract?
It was Jacksonville.
Was it Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Okay. So they give him the big contract and they're like, okay, we're going to make Christian Kirk our one. And then as soon as he gets his feet on the ground, they're like, you know what we're going to do next? We're going to sign Calvin Ridley out of gambling suspension.
Wow.
And we're going to bring him in. And then he kind of becomes the one. And you're like, all right, we got Calvin Ridley. So then what are we going to do? We're going to draft Brian Thomas Jr. in the first round, and we're going to have him be the one. And then, okay, now he's the one. And then what are you going to do? Oh, we're going to draft Travis Hunter, and we're going to tell you that he might be a receiver, but then he also might not be. How about that? Try to figure that out. And then the whole thing shows up week one, and they go, we're going to target Parker Washington a lot.
11 times
and
yesterday.
Nobody even knows who that is. Nobody even knows who that is. I'm so confused by what they do every year. The only thing I can count on is that they'll lose most of their games. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, not That's this year.
Oh, no.
2-1. Division leaders.
Yeah, no.
Whooped up on Houston.
They are not the division leaders. Have you heard of the Indianapolis Colts?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The Colts.
The Colts. But anyway, I got a McCaffrey sort of a question
okay.
for you. Because... here's what I want to know from people. Obviously, if you just go, let's watch it in a vacuum, the touch total is too much. It's too much. Now, I always defend teams when they do this because I'm like, I never understand when people go, oh, you got to limit the touches. And I'm like, so what does that look like when it's 3rd and 3? What does that look like to you? Mac Jones drops back and he looks over the middle. It's 3rd and 3. He's about to deliver the ball, and he goes, oh, wait.
Touches.
That's Christian. I can't throw it to him. He won't be ready for us in January. I better look for some. Poof, you're sacked. Like, I don't understand what that means. You're out there on the football field, and if you're the person where the ball should be delivered, then you're the person where the ball should be delivered. And that's it. The other side to it, though, is obviously – There's a limit to this entire conversation, and you can't run someone into the ground. Meantime, Najee Harris yesterday, out for the year. James Conner yesterday, out for the year. Aaron Jones is already on IR. Jordan Mason looks reminiscent of, you know, Jordan Mason,
yeah.
He looks exactly like him. And so you always see all of this stuff with running backs. And my question is, if there's a limited number of touches left for any one of these players, is the right thing to do, let's stretch it out because something fun might happen in February. Or, I don't know, man, let's use this. Let's use this. We're here now. Why worry about December, January, or February? None of this is guaranteed for any of these players. Let's use him. While he's out here, ready to move the chains for us. I mean, I know the way coaches think. Usually, it's like they don't. Matt LaFleur had a whole rant today that I thought was great because one of his players, I guess, prior to the game in Cleveland yesterday, was caught on a microphone telling some reporter, I feel like we're good enough to go undefeated this year.
Wow.
And LaFleur went on a rant. He goes, I say this all the time. Apparently, I have not said it loud enough to my team. Your goal each week is to go 1-0. That's it. Stop thinking about next week, let alone November, December, or January. It's a week-to-week league. The roster is different every single week. He's right. So if that's it, if all you're doing is thinking about this week, well, then why would you limit Christian McCaffrey in some sort of a way?
You wouldn't. And why would you think that by limiting him, you're going to prevent him from getting hurt? And I'm thinking about James Conner yesterday, where that game was a very physical game. I know all NFL games are, but there was a lot of hard hitting going on both ways. And Conner had 9 carries, and he had 3 catches. And on his 12th touch of the game, something really, really, really bad happened, and he got tackled, and somebody fell on his leg. And I don't know if the official injury is broken ankle, torn ligaments, or all of the above, but you knew immediately when you had players waving to the sideline, yeah, and you see James Conner down, and Kyler Murray can't even look at it, and he takes his helmet off, and he goes away, and everybody's taking a knee. That was on touch number 12 for James Conner. So if you would have limited him to 11 touches, and he never had that 12th touch, does he not get hurt? Well, maybe, but that happened because he's a football player being tackled by humongous individuals. So you look at McCaffrey in the same way where, yeah, McCaffrey yesterday had 17 carries, and he had 10 catches. That's 27. That's too many. He didn't get hurt. Maybe on his 28th touch, something bad would have happened. Maybe on the 27th one, something bad would have happened. So I don't think that in general you can look at it as a certain number and bubble wrap them. The thing about yesterday, Mark, is twofold for me. One, the first half, the Niners almost didn't have the ball at all, so you didn't need to spell McCaffrey. And the second piece is,
yep, that's a good point,
you couldn't run the ball, and he's a much better pass catcher than Brian Robinson. So if you can't run the ball and you have to throw it to your running back, you want McCaffrey.
Well, and can I add a third piece, which is that we're all looking at this receiving core going, man, they're just beset by injuries. We don't even know who the hell's out there. Somebody's out there running around, they're number 9. Somebody else is, what number is Sky Moore wearing? Is he like number 7
number 9
or something?
I think you had it right.
Like number 9, there's number 8. People are just running around out there. You might throw them the ball once a quarter, maybe once a half. And then I bet like the best Niner fans in the world are like, who the hell is that? I don't know, but that's why Christian McCaffrey, I feel like, is getting so many targets right now. He is basically one of their receivers. There's no tight end. There's one receiver, you know. That's it. Like, and so, yes, they are using him a little bit more in the pass game right now than even they normally would. That's what I feel like is going on, and I hope that the steady return of some of these other players will also be a help in lessening the weight that is on Christian's shoulders.
Yeah, and I always go back to 2 years ago when you look at the touch distribution when they went to the Super Bowl, and the touch distribution in the pass game, the targets, was very evenly distributed. And that's what ultimately I think Kyle Shanahan wants, but right now you don't have that luxury. McCaffrey leads the league with 77 touches, more than Bucky Irving, more than Jonathan Taylor, more than Saquon Barkley. Those are your top four in overall touches. And so for right now, that's the only way I think you can go about it. Yesterday's a good example where Sky Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Kendrick Bourne, Kyle Juszczyk, and Jake Tonjes, other than Ricky Pearsall, that was your group of eligibles. And you're talking about a fullback, a third-string tight end, a couple of street free agents that you just found and threw on your team. These are not guys you really want to target in a tight game like that.
See, Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line just sent this in. And hello, 650. Simple answer, win by more than 7 points. Some touches were unnecessary. If you lose, they're wasted. If you barely win 3 weeks in a row, every single one was required. Wouldn't it be wonderful if your NFL team was so good that you could just, by control, head out there and be like, well, today we're not just going to win. We're going to win by double digits. The goal is so that, like, we're going to rest our starters in the fourth quarter. In my life of watching sports, I'm 50 years old. I've seen one team in one sport sort of have that ability to where they were almost upset if their guys had to play at the end of the game. And you know exactly who I'm talking about. It's when Kevin Durant played here. There was one team that was so head and shoulders above the rest of the league that it was like an inconvenience if they had to go out there and finish the game. That's how good they were. You don't have that. And I don't think anybody in the NFL has that. I don't think the Ravens or the Bills are even that good to where, I mean, maybe some weeks, but my God, give the Niners a little bit of slack here. Their quarterback's hurt. Their tight end's hurt. A couple of their receivers are hurt. Their best defensive end went out in the game, and you're telling them to go win by more? Hell, like, I'm just glad they were in a position to win at all. This is incredible. If you had laid out the adversity they've faced before the season and then said, okay, how do you think they'll be after three games? You'd be nuts to say anything better than 1-2.
Yeah. So you got George Kittle for a half. You've got Brock Purdy for a game. You don't have Ayuk. You're going to lose an offensive lineman. And you're not going to have Nick Bosa other than for two games in a quarter.
And
what's
Jennings,
your record?
Jennings has played in barely more than half the quarter.
And you had to swap out your kicker.
Yep.
You had to find a kicker off the street. And yeah, how you doing, Niners? Oh, you're 1-2. And you beat New Orleans, and it's going to be close. And I don't know how you're going to get it done, but you're not going to beat Seattle on the road. And Arizona at home, heck, I mean, even Dan Dibley thought you should take Arizona in the points, and he was right. So you're doing it with smoke and mirrors. Help is on the way. Hopefully Purdy comes back. But to me, the bigger issue of the McCaffrey touch conversation is you've got to find a way to run the football more effectively. That way you can get Brian Robinson Jr. to be more a part of the offense.
The Lions and Ravens are tied at 7.
Yeah.
Okay? The game is less than 10 minutes old. Do you know how many touches Jahmyr Gibbs has?
Probably 5?
7. On one drive.
Yeah, I gotta check my fantasy now.
Well, he got a touchdown.
I saw that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of yards.
I got a catch, though.
Yeah, you got a catch.
PPR.
2 yards of carry on the ground.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, I'm now at a 50-50 chance to win. I love these percentages.
Oh, see,
where are you at, Giddings?
No, don't do that. Because
where are you at, Evan Giddings?
No, but you gave up. You
died. No, give up.
Yes, you did. Before the show, you're like, I got killed. I got no chance.
Oh,
of course you have a chance.
I just mentioned that I'm bad at fantasy, and I said this before I even joined this cockamamie 16-team league. Quinshon Judkins. Good game now.
He looks pretty good.
Yeah, he is.
He looks pretty good.
He is.
Pretty good.
My problem is with I started Jay Sanders at tight end. Jatavion Sanders. And now he's out. I've lost 4 tight ends in 3 weeks.
Who else have you lost? Why are you Kittle
and Evan Ingram.
Okay. Well, that'll get better.
Jatavion Sanders.
The NFL should play the Ravens and the Lions every Monday night.
Pretty fun.
I mean, I don't know anything.
Did I tell you to bet the over?
7-7. Derrick Henry. Like, no fantasy game is over because half of everybody's players are in this game. They're like the two, and they're a great example, I think, of what we're talking about. Do you think either of these coaches, you think Harbaugh's like, man, we got to limit all this Lamar Jackson stuff. It's a lot. I mean, he's out there every single play, throwing it, running it, getting tackled, sliding, cutting on legs. We got to limit this. Herm Edwards.
Play to win the game.
Herm Edwards.
Hello?
You play to win the game.
So anybody who's worried about Christian touches, I hear you. And as you pointed out when Javi called earlier, you're not wrong. But it's beaten by that thought right there. You play to win the game. And that's what the 49ers are doing right now. So I don't know what the fix to this is. I really don't.
The fix is be able to run the ball,
yep,
and then you can have Brian Robinson Jr. do more of that. And I do think that yesterday was a byproduct of the fact that your opening drive was 3 and out. Your next drive was, you had the ball a little bit. Robinson got a carry in that second drive. And then ultimately things kind of progressed from there. And you didn't really need Robinson in the first half because you didn't have the ball enough.
Yeah. I just know that, like, I wonder how many have that opinion when you're watching the game. It's super easy, I think, to call Willard and Dibbs on Monday and be like, I looked at the box score and Christian had, and what was it yesterday, 27 touches? Christian had 27 touches. Okay, so on 3rd and 3, when you're watching the game and Mac drops back and you see Christian run that route over the middle, like, are you in that moment, like, don't throw it to him? Or in that moment, are you like, why is he in the game? Brian Robinson should be in the game. I don't feel that way. Do you feel that way?
No.
That never, ever. I did at one point, it crossed my mind where I'm like, ooh, B-Rob's not getting a whole lot of run today. I get that. But I think your reasoning there is explains that. The Niners had lengthy periods of time of rest on the offensive side of the ball. So that's why they kept putting him out there.
Right. Yeah. And also the skill set that was needed was a pass catcher. And so that's why you had him out there. You didn't target Tonjes or MVS or Sky Moore much. It was, is Ricky open? Okay, he's not. Where's Christian? We're going to go ahead and throw to Christian this time. And that's what got the win.
888-957-9570 is the number, and we're not done taking your calls just as of yet. So fire away. This is Willard and Dibs.
Pinheiro, the 6-year man out of Florida, who made his San Francisco debut last week, has 6 game-winning field goals in his career. Last 3 years with the Carolina Panthers. Started as a soccer player in Miami before he started playing high school football as a senior. Trying to do what he's done a half dozen times before and win the game with his leg. Sweeps it, delivers it, and San Francisco is in first place. They win it at the horn. Mac Jones steps in for Brock Purdy and delivers the drive. Pinheiro delivers the winner.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
That's some high-quality play-by-play right there. That's some build, that drama. Adam Amin,
yep,
with the call. Eddie Pinheiro with the kicker trash talk. Sent that thing up through the uprights. And then I think turned and looked at all the fans and yelled, I know the names of my teammates. I've been here now for 2 weeks.
You like that? You like that?
I met them all recently.
Dude, has there ever been a more satisfying, at least recent memory, a more just relieving, satisfying kick? Can you imagine if he had missed that thing?
You said it earlier. Can you imagine if the mustachioed Moody had come up out for that?
I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I would have gone in the backyard.
And I'm happy that Jake is on a practice squad, and I think wind up kicking in the league again this year, and maybe somewhere soon after yesterday. That had to be the wildest, especially the morning, the wildest day for kicking that I can remember, with like blocked kicks and block sixes and off the upright and all the rest of it. Dude, that thing was just madness.
I don't know. Do you ever do this when you're still red zoning? Like, the Niner game hadn't started yet, so we're red zoning.
I was zoning.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's like a drug, dude. Just big shot of red zone.
Especially after Milo usually goes down for a nap about 12:45, so I was able to.
I've never done crack. The witching hour.
Well, I'm like grinding on, at this moment, my mind was on survivor pools. And the Browns and Packers are doing their thing. And a lot of people had picked Green Bay. And so I'm watching that, kind of freaking out a little bit. My pick had been later in the day. I picked Seattle. Little did I know that would be over in 12 seconds. But it hadn't started yet. So I'm grinding on the Green Bay thing. And then I went and did some stuff. And drove over to Christie's or whatever. And we popped the TV on. And the Jets are ahead of the Bucs. I'm like, wait a minute. I had moved on from that game.
Aaron Glenn with a great celebration after that one.
How do you feel when a head coach does that?
Mixed.
Right?
It's mixed. My buddy is on that staff, so I'm really kind of a closet Jets fan.
Granny didn't like it.
No, I liked it.
Oh, you did like it.
I don't like your guys' reaction. He's trying to get his first win as a head coach. Go crazy.
I don't have a reaction to it. I'm asking a question.
It was mixed for me because I know the game was not over and you end up losing. So,
well, okay. A lot of people, you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing when the coach runs with the player. That's funny. There's McVay, who once went into the end zone and started high-fiving people. But now Aaron Glenn entered into the, like, He did his own dance after the whole thing was... I never fund police. I have no issue with it, but I just know that a lot of people do. They don't. They want the head coach to just be stoic and nod and be like, okay, that's exactly what we had planned to do. We scored a touchdown
there. How about
there.
Shanahan's reaction after the kick goes through?
Yeah, that was a red-faced bleep, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I could see him thinking, this is what it feels like when you've got a kicker who makes kicks, when we need a kick made, and I've got that guy. So there you have it. That was a great reaction.
Well, it's a nerve-wracking moment because of everything you've been through. That's not Jake Moody out there, but if the kick misses, the problem is...
Exists.
Rebirthed.
Yeah, no doubt.
And so that's very stressful. Very stressful. And the fact that it was right down the middle, you didn't even need to give it a little of that body language. You didn't need to do any of that. Just like the minute he kicked it, you're like, we're gone. This thing's home. We won. Beautiful. Let's go to Jose in Oakland. Hi, Jose. Thank you for calling the show. What's up?
Hey, guys. Do you realize how many TVs were saved from being broken yesterday? I mean, so many people would have smashed a TV if Moody had been there. And I mean, I don't mean to pile on the guy. He's no longer doing the team. I mean, I wish him nothing but the best, and I really do hope that he... get signed either by the Packers, the Eagles or the Chiefs. The one, you know, I wish him nothing but success and go on and play with them. Hopefully we'll see them, in the playoffs. Because if he does sign one of those teams, then he has a game-winning field goal. We know we can put that one in the back. Okay. It was so stress-free to have, Piñero doing that. You know, the field goal, if it had been Moody, I probably would have just turned off the TV and just read, you know, later on whether they won or lost because I had no faith in him. As far as Christian McCaffrey, you know what, it's a catch 22. If you don't play him, I mean, you can say don't play him so much because we can save him for a game during the playoffs, but we won't get to the playoffs if you don't play him. You know, I mean, the way the offense is right now. He's basically the offense.
That's it. That's the conundrum. You just touched on it, Jose. You save him for the playoffs, you may not be in the playoffs.
That would be like, Major League manager saving his best pitcher for, game seven. You might not get to game seven. So, you know what, you might just go all out, just like Bruce Bochy used to do. But like I said, it's kind of a question too. The only thing they can do is just try to protect him, and hopefully the guy won't get injured. Other than that, I can wait for reinforcements to come in, as far as the receivers, maybe that will change that a bit. Other than that, I'm really enjoying this season, to be honest with you.
3-0, how can you not? Jose, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jose.
I'm in full agreement, and, you know, the only reinforcement that we know for sure is going to be there this weekend is DeMarcus Robinson. And I was excited about him in the preseason. He's a talented guy, and I think that he really could find a home here. We'll see. And it would be nice if Brock Purdy is also the one delivering him the ball. Don't know about Juwan Jennings and all that. But, yeah, the reinforcements are on the way. And I would think that the hope is that means more chains moving and less reliance on Christian in the passing game. That's the hope.
Yeah, that's the hope. But the reality might be totally different. And I just can't help but think about the olden days, Mark. And you had me thinking about Roger Craig and – touches, because we're all trying to bubble wrap Christian McCaffrey. And there was a year Roger Craig had 310 carries and 76 catches. That's a 386 touch season. And I don't remember in 1988, well, there wasn't sports talk radio, but I don't remember fans or people talking about how, they're giving Roger the ball too much. He had 26 carries for .143 in a game. Then he went 26 for 162. They gave him the ball every single play, and we never cried about it.
We didn't watch football that way back then. There was no analytics. There was fantasy football, but nobody knew about it.
Right.
It was like 12 dudes, who had phones and actually answered them when they called each other. There were newspapers, you made your picks, and that was it. Like, you rooted for there was no fantasy football, sports bars, all that. Like, you just rooted for your team. It was so less overthought. And I'm not against that because, again, that overthinking leads to some good, some bad. That's what leads to, load management, for example. But at the same time, it also leads to probably some smarter play, longevity of career. I don't really know, but it's not going back in the tube, that's for sure. But yeah, you're right. Nobody watched that way back then,
right? And you had Roger Craig, who's, I don't know if he's more durable than McCaffrey. He was injured less throughout the course of his career, but just looking at his biggest year, 386 touches, 1988, and it was, all right, we should probably give him the ball a little bit more. And now we're, McCaffrey, they're using him too much.
Talking all that out here on 95.7, the game is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. 3-0, man. 3-0. That's what wins the day for me. I hate it for Nick. I hate it for the 49er franchise, but the 3-0, and there's a lot of time to sort of figure out what the next move is, and then what the move after that is, and what the move after that is. So it feels like a death blow in a way, but it's not.
It's not, especially 3-0. And, you move forward, and it's next man up, and no one can replace what Nick Bosa does. But I guarantee you this, when they face Jacksonville on Sunday, they will have 11 people on defense.
Yeah, they will, at least to start the game.
No.
Thank you for
saying that. Had to bookend the show with a little Cheryl. I
appreciate that.
No, come on.
Come on.
Not Harbaugh.
Not an ACL.
Oh,
again.
No, Ben.
All right, what are you doing, Grandy? What's about to happen on the radio?
We're going to go back to Steiny and Goo when the news of Nick Bosa's positive ACL tear came out, and then we're going to hear you guys on the crossover after that.
Okay, sounds good. That's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. You want to do it again tomorrow?
Sure.
Okay, all right.
I was going to hit you with it. No, but I do.
John Feliciano, among those who will be appearing on Willie and Dibby tomorrow. So we'll talk to you then. Thanks for today. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.